So here we are at the end of the eighth week. Here's a section through that region there in higher power. It's at the bottom of the late embryo page. If you click on one of those images, you'll see it in a bigger magnification. And here's the urinary bladder with the ureters emptying into it. Here are the paired mesenteric ducts, which will be forming the ductus deferens. And between them, in the male still, are the paramesenteric ducts, which will be degenerating and lost in the male. Directly behind them is the rectum, and you can see the differentiation of the layers of the wall of the gastrointestinal tract here. And similarly, in this other image, we can see at higher power the two paramesenteric ducts and the mesenteric duct in week 8 fetus, embryo. So now, let's jump forward just a couple of weeks to the fetus. So if we've looked at the male, let's look at the female in the early fetal stage. So this is week 10, very early into the second trimester, fetal development, not even into the second trimester yet. And what we've got are a series of sections labelled D, C, B and A. And the best way to imagine them is that A is the most lateral, and as we go up the alphabet, we move towards the midline. So D is in the midline of our female fetus. So when we take these sections, these sagittal sections, through the fetus and look at them, and there are some complete sections that you can have a look at that are linked. Where are they linked? They're linked when you open any of the pictures, actually. If we look just down the pelvic region, because that's where we're interested in sort of genital development. So when we look in plane A, we should see all the lateral structures. And here's plane A, at the pelvic region here, the most lateral of them. And here's the vertebral column, so it's sitting with the lower limb here. There's the acetabulum, lower leg, dorsal root ganglia coming off. And what you'll notice is that the kidney is visible here. And here is the developing kidney with the renal pelvis. The ureter would be coming out of here. Where's it anatomically located in the body? How do we describe its position? Retroperitoneal. So even in the fetus, in the early fetus, we can see that it's developed in the wall and remains within the wall, retroperitoneal. And above it is the fetal adrenal gland. And you'll remember from my endocrine talk that this isn't the adult adrenal gland yet. Lying directly underneath it, but hanging off a mesentery called the mesophorus, which is the equivalent of the mesorchium for the male system, is the ovary. And here's the ovary here, this dark staining structure, just as we saw a dark staining structure in the late embryo for the male. It's sitting within the peritoneal cavity. This structure adjacent to it, just like we saw for the late embryo, is the degenerating mesonephros. And it doesn't look so much like a puffin, but a little yellow plastic ducky, I suppose, is what I like to imagine, where the body is the duck's body, and here's the head, and there's the beak. You're trying. I must have better things to do with myself than imagining animals, at least. And on the beak here is, once again, the paramesenteric duct, and the eye is the mesenteric duct. So this structure here is going to be connected to nothing at all. It's going to be lost. And the paramesenteric duct is going to be sitting over the ovary and forming the opening of the uterine tube. So this is a lateral section, and you can see the midgut is still herniated outside of the fetus. Now, if we move right the way across to the midline, and in this D plane here, so this is close to the midline, once again the vertebral column, the gut. And in the midline, of course, we're not going to see the ovaries because they're lateral. But what we see down here is the rectum in this region, which would run up and connect to the hindgut here. Lying ventral to the rectum are the paramesenteric ducts, which have fused in the midline to form the uterus and the vagina. So the vagina lies in front of the rectum just here, and the uterus above it connected to it. And lying ventral to that again This is our urinary bladder with the detrusor muscle on it, and this would be running out into the allantois out here. So this is the anatomical relationship of these elements, and directly in front of it is our pubic symphysis. Now, while we've begun to differentiate the internal genital tract for the female, externally, we've still got just the genital tubercle. So it's still an undifferentiated external genitalia in the early stages of fetal development. So this is going to be our last structure to differentiate. Down here would be where the cloacal membrane would have laid. And in a section just next to it, we can see here the lumen of the paramesonephric duct forming the lumen of the uterus in this superior region here, and the vagina in this region is still a solid structure. So in relation to the 3D relationship in a female mouse, here's the urinary bladder. The dorsal connection of the paramesonephric ducts are shown in red that lie beside the mesonephric ducts, which will be lost in the female. And these two paramesonephric ducts will fuse in the midline in this region here. And this will form the body of the uterus. And this will open onto the surface. These two arms out here will form the uterine tubes or fallopian tubes. Now the very inferior end of the paramesonephric duct down here, where it fuses into the posterior wall and we carry to the surface, so it opens onto the ectoderm, not endoderm, this region will form the vagina. And it will differ from your description in many textbooks as to its embryonic origin, but the vagina's origin comes from paramesonephric duct. In this region. So what's going to occur is the fusion of the two ducts in the midline, and as they fuse together, they form the body of the uterus. So here's the urogenital sinus down here. Ignore this process because it's not exactly what happens. This should be coloured red. But this structure that's occurring through the fusion in the midline is the uterine body. And these two arms up here are the uterine tubes. Now, this process that occurs during fetal development, abnormalities in this lead to septa being present within the uterus, or abnormal junctional regions here where one arm is totally disconnected from the vagina, or a duplication of the uterus, where a complete septum forms down to here. Now, this region of the duct is affected by a growth factor called BMP4, which makes this region of the duct different from the rest of the uterus. So its epithelia changes to the vaginal epithelia, and it doesn't become responsive to estrogen and progesterone like the uterine lining does. So it becomes insensitive to those hormones, and this discriminates it between the uterus lining and the vaginal lining. So that's the internal genital tract. The internal male genital tract is not interesting at all. The ductus deferens is just hang around as tubular structures. They don't fuse or do anything interesting. The only thing interesting that happens is the generation of the prostate, seminal vesicles at the junctional region where it empties into the urethra, which we won't talk about today. So during the fetal period, that fused structure increases in size. As I mentioned in the lecture, it triples in size by birth, and the width doubles in size as well. This leaves us with the last part of today's talk in terms of differentiation of the structures, and I'm only left with abnormalities after this. And now I'm going to go through the external genital differentiation. And this is the third process that occurs after the internal differentiation. We start with exactly the same structures, and this animation here is a view from the inferior surface. So you're looking up from underneath at both the male and the female. And they both start exactly the same in terms of their origins, but will form completely different structures when they differentiate. And that is, initially, if I stop it at the beginning, initially we have the opening of where the cloacal membrane was, in this region here. And these folds on either side are described as the genital folds. So that's the surface region where it externalizes. So these are the two folds on either side. And this structure at the anterior top of the genital folds, this is the genital tubercle that we've seen in the embryo and the fetus so far. It lies at the top of the genital folds. Now, through the fetal period, what were described in the embryo as scrotal swellings, these swellings in the epithelia out here in the surface, these will form the outer labia. So this fold outside of the genital fold, this one here, and this one here, are the two outer labia. These internal genital folds are the labia minora. And what we see when the septum forms is separation of the rectal component from the urogenital component ventrally. The other change that occurs through the fetal period is the change in the anterior genital tubercle. This will differentiate to form the clitoris in the female. So this portion here forms the clitoris anteriorly, the top, and we have our two genital folds, and no fusion in the midline. Now, for the female, for the male, we once again start with the same external genital structure. So it looks exactly the same externally. So we can label it up exactly the same. We have the genital tubercle here. We've got the genital folds and the skin folds here, which we described as the scrotal swellings before. And this is where the scrotum will form. Now, the big difference here is that under the influence of testosterone, which is converted locally in that anatomical region into dihydrotestosterone, which is much more potent, this will differentiate into the male external genitalia. So this is regulated by testosterone, as is the ductus deferens differentiation, as too is the prostate differentiation, all regulated steroidally by the testosterone secretion from the gonad. Now, what will happen is that the separation will occur by the septation, and this genital folds on the inferior side here will fuse together during the fetal period. And the genital tubercle here at the top will now form the glands of the penis, or the end of the penis. The genital folds, when they fuse together in the midline, will form the shaft of the penis here. And the fusion occurs on the inferior side of the penis. And this means that the urethra is carried right out to the end of the penis and is open further down for the female. This process of fusion is one of the sites for abnormalities in males, one of the most common abnormalities that we see, and that is described as hyperspadia. And that is when these folds fail to fuse in the midline, anywhere along its length, then the urethra will open onto the inferior side of the penis. And we can also, in severe cases, have a failure of the region here where the raphe is for the scrotum also occurring. So it can be open along its length. Now, this differentiation precedes the descent of the testes. So the descent of the testes occur after this process has occurred. Once again, in the fetal period. This animation here shows you how the testes descend away from the kidneys, and in both male and female, they descend within the peritoneal cavity. The big difference is for the males is that during the third trimester, or the end of the second one into the third, the testes continue to descend through the abdominal wall, and they'll pass through the muscular layers of the abdominal wall into the scrotal region. Now, this process, as shown here, is guided by a tendon-like structure attached to the inferior end of the testes. So this is the testes. These are the muscular walls of the body. And this is the peritoneal lining, just shown here in orange. I've put labelled diagrams in the page, so you can just cut and paste those. And what happens is that there is a shortening of this gubernaculum, this green structure, which guides the testes. So the shortening process itself may not be actually pulling it through, but guides it through this anterior region of the body wall. And these inguinal channel here are the weaknesses that we see in the male and sites of potential herniation later on, because there's a weakness in the musculature there. And what occurs through the third trimester is this descent of the testes into the scrotum. And as it descends, it pulls with it the peritoneal lining, and this cavity that's formed adjacent to the testes is the processus vaginalis. And this, as well, is the site for an inguinal hernia, because it's a weakness in the abdominal wall. In addition to a herniation in this site, if the processus doesn't close or fuse to form a double layer just here, then we're left with a fluid-filled sac, which is described as a hydrocele. And this fluid-filled sac is another abnormality that can occur in males, and a communication also with the peritoneal cavity. So we can see all the layers lining the scrotal region here. Now, this is a fetal event, and so from studies in human fetuses as they develop, we see a descent during the late second into the third trimester, and we see a high incidence of undescended testes in premature male infants. So this must be a very late fetal event. And often we'll see testes in the pathway of descent for these premature infants. And it's quite common, even in term infants, to have a small percentage of males that have undescended testes that descend after birth. So the last thing that I'd like to talk about, and I'll just squeeze it into the end for the sake of the recording, are abnormalities of this system. I'll mention a little bit about the postnatal. Look, you can work through the postnatal material for yourself. You'd be aware that the germ cells in the female are in the meiotic stage, prophase one, but in the male, they haven't commenced meiosis yet. They'll commence their meiotic divisions at puberty. So there's quite a difference in sex development in the gonads there. In addition to that, the seminiferous tubules are initially solid structures, and they form tubular structures later on. So they form a lumen of these seminiferous tubules as well. And the first stage in development for the gonads is actually mitosis. So the germ cells, the primordial germ cells, form spermatogonia. That's the diploid cell in the male gonad. All of the other events that are occurring are during puberty, when we get hormonal changes again, and the other genital developments, or not really genital developments, but the secondary sex characteristics relate to puberty, and I won't cover that today. There's some notes there to talk about the hormonal stimulus for growth and differentiation that can occur. Now I'll jump to abnormalities. And I feel it's important to describe abnormalities in today's class, because it's such a common feature of the major abnormalities we see in newborn infants. And that is that abnormalities of the genital system represent 12% of all of the major systemic abnormalities we see in Australian births. And if you add into that the abnormalities of the urinary system, which represent about 6.5% of all of the major systemic abnormalities, then these two components together represent a big wedge in that pie of major abnormalities in development. And you've seen how complicated it is, as it runs through from not only the embryonic period, but into the fetal period for its development. So it's got a very long time course for development that's hormonally regulated and has many factors associated with it. So the most important thing to note is that because of this long time course, there are different windows or critical periods where the genital system can be affected by environmental effects or exposure to teratogens. And depending upon the time of exposure, will affect the development of different components of the genital system. So we As I said to you already, we see in premature infants often undescended testes, and even in term infants, there are abnormalities of an undescended testy. And this is called cryptorchidism. It occurs in 30% of premature males and 3 to 4% of term males. And a true cryptorchidism is when the testes lies in the pathway of descent, anywhere along the inguinal ring down into the suprascrotal region. So this is the normal pathway of descent. In addition to that, we have what's called an ectopic testes, and this is a testes that goes for a wander. It leaves the pathway of descent and can be located in a whole range of other regions, prepenile, out here in the femoral region, or even superficial ectopic regions. And so this is not in the pathway of descent, but an ectopic testes. This image here shows you the effect of an inguinal hernia, and that is part of the intestine gets pushed out of the peritoneal cavity into the scrotal sac. And I can only imagine how painful that must be. You can imagine if this closed afterwards, then we'd block some of the blood supply to this structure as well. The other major abnormality for the male external genitalia is, as I said, a hyperspadia. And the hyperspadias are classified according to the position of the opening of the urethra. So the degree of the failure of fusion will determine where the urethra opens, either along the inferior side or right back at the base or even in the scrotal opening. So this is the classic classification. Hyperspadias is the most common abnormality in the male penis, occurring 1 in 300. In addition to that, there are internal genital abnormalities, and that is blocking of the ductus deferens where it doesn't become a tube, absence of the ductus deferens, and in the female, more rarely, the abnormalities of the fusion of the paramese nephric ducts. In the additional information, I've given you some more background about disorders of sex development. And given that it's almost 5 o'clock and everyone's brain dead by this time of the day, I'm going to finish 5 minutes early and get you out of here in some fresh air. Thanks very much. Enjoyed having you in BGDD.